Hello, everyone. This is Aonani Ravenclaw, and you're listening to Guildcast.
Everyone, welcome back to this 94th episode of Guildcast for February 18th, 2008. I'm your host, Sean. In this extra long episode, I got together with a few friends to discuss the prospects of Guild Wars 2 based on what we know about it so far. I had originally envisioned this episode as a way to debate the topic, with two people being for Guild Wars 2 and two people being against it. But then, you know, I figured that wouldn't really work. So we decided to basically all talk about 10 topics concerning the sequel, and each person would give their thoughts on those topics. I still got two from each opinion camp, though, but it was more of a roundtable civil discussion show than anything. So the four people I had on were Lady Sinea and Aurora Sion, or Rory, as she's better known, who were both mainly on the against side of the fence. And then there was Loudon Swain and Logan Starlogic, who were on the for side of the fence. I think we got some interesting points ironed out in this one, and I think it really did make for a fun recording in all. But before that, I had a few people to mention. There's Grandpa Gravedigger, Johnny Indo, Mitch Spirit Slayer, Easy Killer Easy, and Karthos of Shadows from the Protectors of the Lost Fate. I will, of course, come back to talk about some other news after this recording, so stick with me until the end. You can make it. Okay, here we are on episode 94 of Guildcast, and what we're going to do in this show is it's going to be the Guild Wars 2 roundtable show. We're going to have a couple people debate on a few of the different issues that we know about Guild Wars 2 so far. And with me so far today, we have Lady Sinea.
Hello.
We have Loudon Swain.
Hello, Loudon fans.
We have Logan Starlogic.
Hi.
And we have Rory.
Howdy.
And what we're going to do is Lady Sinea and Rory are going to kind of play the side of being against Guild Wars 2. And Logan and Loudon are going to be on the side for Guild Wars 2. And it's not going to be so much like, arguing points and everything. What I do is I got 10 different issues, and these are facts that I got from wiki.guildwars2.com, which is the new Guild Wars 2 wiki. And in addition to that, I also got an idea from the Nikki Wiki, which I know I've talked about before on this show. It's kind of like a collective wiki for ideas for Guild Wars 2 that people have put together. And I just got a few of those ideas. We got 10 of them, and we're going to talk about each one and see how everyone feels about these different issues. So we're going to start with the first one. And this is the only one that's really not something that's been set in stone or something that one of the developers has actually stated is going to happen. This is the first one that's actually just an idea that people want to see, and it's the Auction House. Now, the Auction House was the most popular idea over at NikkiWiki.com, and it's one of the biggest things that players want to see in Guild Wars 2. And the deal with it is that ArenaNet has said before that the Auction House is not really possible in the current game system of Guild Wars 1, but the fact that they're restructuring Guild Wars for Guild Wars 2 from the ground up would make it seem like an auction house would be possible. So what I want to know is I want to know how you guys feel about the introduction of an auction house for Guild Wars. Would it be a good thing or a bad thing?
Who would think it was a bad thing?
That's what I'm asking. Does anybody think it would be a bad thing?
I'd be really excited for it because I have a lot of trouble locating 12% enchant staff wraps because everyone just merchants them, so I need a better avenue to get at those.
I think it'd be great because I hate selling things.
I think it depends on the system. If it's going to take a long time or if it's a long drawn out process to actually auction the items, then it can just stick with Guild Wars Guru and do what I've been doing. But if it's going to be a fast thing that I can do in game while I'm doing something else, then it would be an asset.
One good thing about it would be if they had it so, like, when you made an offer, you submitted the money right then, and when you put something up for sale, you, like, turned over the item, so there wouldn't be all that crap that always happens with, oh, I accidentally sold it, and I don't have it anymore, or, oh, I don't really have the money, can you give me a couple days to farm, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lotro does that. It requires you, like, if you put a bid on something, it takes the money out right then. And then if you are outbid on it, you get the money back. So it prevents you from, like, you know, trying to bid and spend way more money than you actually have. And it's all in-game. I think the auctions are limited to 2 days. So there's, like, really fast turnarounds. Like, it's not, like, a big complicated process.
Just out of curiosity, is there a lot of crap in the Lotro auction house? Just junk stuff that no one would want?
I don't think so, because if you put junk up there, it charges you a fee for placing items. So it's like people just, they'll just vendor merch the things that they know aren't going to sell for anything.
That's cool. I like that charge a fee to post something idea.
Yeah,
that's good, because especially if you can do it in-game and as you're going, especially like if there's, I don't know, a double weekend drop or something, supply and demand will keep even so people can get more money at that time instead of letting it just sit in auction or holding it in their inventory waiting for a price to go up. That'd be neat. Mm-hmm.
Also, with things like green weapons that only go for like 35 gold in a merchant, and, you know, somebody somewhere wants one. It's just, you gotta find it.
Yeah. It's like, the thing that I want to see is the convenience factor. It's like, there's a weapon that I want, and it's only worth like 2K. Nobody's selling it. I can't find a seller, but I don't want to go spend the time to go farm for the thing. It's like, there's someone out there who has one for sale. I just haven't like gone to every district and watched all the time to go see where they are.
Or is like me and just doesn't like to sell in Lion's Arch.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the auction house would actually help out people who don't like to go on Guild Wars Guru and, you know, register, and then it's kind of like an off-site thing where you have to go away from game and do all this stuff. It would be really nice to have all this in-game. I think it would probably help a lot more people get into the selling and buying, you know, part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having to go to a separate site to go manage things that would be better done inside of the game is like a big hassle.
Yeah,
especially there's no real accountability if someone doesn't follow through with a trade or something. So if it was done in-game, they could be penalized, or at least you know that it's going to be worth it.
Or that you would know that your sale would definitely go through if somebody said, yeah, I'll pay you 25K for this item, and then they can't say, oh, I don't want it after all.
Right, because what's Guru going to do? Slap my hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're all pretty much in agreement that the auction house would be a great thing, right?
Yeah, I guess 4 stars.
Okay, so let's go on to the next idea. This one is dealing with the payment plans for the game. And we know, you know, right now Guild Wars 1 has no subscription fee, even though, you know, they still have sold the boxes, they've still sold the different chapters, and then they sold the expansion, and they sell, you know, like character slots and different things like that in the online store. Well, they've said that for sure Guild Wars 2 will not have any subscription fees, and they're going to keep that part of it. But they're not going to do the chapters like they, you know, they originally started doing with Guild Wars 1. Now, if they don't have a monthly fee, then it seems like microtransactions might be the only other way that they're going to make money. And I'm not, you know, I'm not positive on that, but that just seems like that's the road it might take. So what I want to know is how you guys feel about microtransactions versus the chapter system that we had before.
I'm totally fine with the micro subscription kind of thing. Like if they come out, you know, I mean, Gwen, that kind of thing where you pay extra for extra content, or something like, you know, we got Sorrow's Furnace for free back in the day, but that was definitely worth paying a little bit extra for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great way to support the game, as long as they don't make it so that there's things in the expansions where you're forced to buy it. You know, as long as they keep game balance like they do now, with you don't necessarily have to have a chapter and you're still just as competitive as anybody else.
I'm fine with it too, as long as they promote it correctly and not like what they did in the past with the bonus mission pack and where everyone kind of had to buy that for a different price when they totaled out in the store. I mean, that wasn't really honest. So as long as they're honest and upfront with what we're getting, I'm fine with paying for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. That bonus mission pack, only exclusive online store thing was pretty much not cool. And if they were pulling that stuff a lot in Guild Wars 2, then that would be enough to make me walk, I think, because that's just bad business practice, I think. It's deceptive.
That was exactly what I was going to say, is if they market it from the start and say, this is the way that we're going to do it, and, you know, there will be microtransactions, and, you know, maybe every 3 months we're going to have new content, and you could purchase it for, like, $10 or $20, I would be fine with that. But if they started with one business plan and then changed it in the middle, it's like you kind of do a little bit of a bait and switch, and it's not fair to people who start playing the game and expect it to be a certain way, and then they change it on you.
I think my only problem with the microtransactions is that, as you probably know, I don't have a credit card of any type, so that would involve me getting my dad and borrowing his credit card and then paying him back, and it's a whole lot of hassle for a game. And I think that would really be my only problem with the microtransactions, is that for people who aren't old enough to have such great things,
it's not a great thing, let me tell you, Logan.
Not a great thing.
Yeah, I know. I kind of expect somebody to say that. But yeah, it would be a bit more difficult for people like... Man, I keep saying this. People like me.
So, Logan...
They could get around that, though, because... you know, places will sell, you could go to, like, your local game store, and they'll have time cards for the company, and you could purchase it and, like, add, like, $30 to your account. They could have something like that if they wanted to make sure that they don't lose their younger players.
Now, yeah,
like
if they did that,
kind of idea.
If they did that, I would do it. I mean, I would totally be up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm looking forward to a Guild Wars 2 without a Logan. I'm hoping...
Is everybody against me?
Yeah.
Yes.
That comment about other people like you kind of scared me, Logan.
All right, so let's go on to the third issue, and that is they're going to introduce a Z-axis on characters now, which is basically the ability to jump and swim and climb and slide and all that kind of stuff that we see in probably most other MMOs out there. And... I know this isn't really a strong issue, you know, it's not kind of a make or break issue for gamers, but I know that there were a lot of seasoned MMO players who kind of scoffed at the linear environment of Guild Wars 1 the way it is, where you can't do these kind of things, where a lot of people have complained about the fact that you can, you know, you're going down a path and you can only go down that path, you can't go up these hills on the side or anything like that. You can't go across the river, you know, to the other side, things like that. And that was a big problem for a lot of people. But I think during the course of Guild Wars 1, people overlooked that, and it wasn't really as big of a deal as it seemed. But now that they're going to introduce this, do you think it would be a good thing, or do you think it would completely change the gameplay or anything drastic at all like that?
I think it would be a bad thing for people like Loudon who have no micro. They're going to have a lot of trouble with this new game. Being able to move around.
Right. Question 3, and gloves are coming off. Actually, the one thing, you know how when you play like Unreal or a game like that where you're like kind of strafing left and right and hitting the space bar over and over to hop up and down to make yourself harder to hit? That is really annoying, and that's not what I'm looking for in Guild Wars. So if all that, you know, micro, as Rory calls it, spazzing out on the keyboard is going to be required to... make it harder to target you and stuff like that, that it's kind of a turnoff for me. But that's just my personal gaming style. I'm not an FPS guy.
Okay, now that I was going to say I had 2 things to say, but now I have 3 things to say. But first, now I doubt that they're going to make this like less, well, make like the jumping thing make you harder to target or anything, because I'm guessing the actual way you fight is not going to change that much. Like with the whole selecting a character and pressing spacebar to attack. I'm guessing that is probably not going to change that much. I have been wrong before. Second thing is, what? What?
What? Nothing. There's something in my throat.
Right. Second thing is that this is going to be hell for cartographers, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Because being able to get to different places will be nice, but it will add a whole lot more to explore. And I had a third thing, but I forgot. Oh, I noticed that Prophecies is a whole lot more free-roaming than the other two Guild Wars chapters. And just thought that was interesting that, you know, with Prophecies, you can go in all of these different places, and they say it's very linear. I guess when you're looking at Nightfall or Factions, it's very linear. But not Prophecies. Prophecies isn't very linear. I've gotten lost.
Yeah, oh, I mean, linear being, like, the fact that you can only run, like, front and back and side to side as opposed to running up a hill, necessarily,
yeah.
Or something like that. Not linear being storyline.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's mainly just the movement. And that's the thing is, you know, you see a river and you can see, you know, it's maybe 20, 30 feet wide and you know that you could swim it, you know, and your character just stops right at the edge. And it's one of those things where it's like, what's going on here?
I would like to see, like, being able to, like, you could jump down, like, a 6-foot drop as opposed to having to run all the way around this huge path to get down. Because that is really annoying. But in general, I would probably be opposed to this because you don't know what it's going to affect in PvP.
I was about to say, I think probably I just thought of a downside is that if you get somebody backed into a corner and you like jump off a hill and land right next to them, drop like lava font or something, you kind of have a problem.
Well, see, if they did it well and were able to incorporate being able to use, like, objects for cover to prevent line of sight, if you viewed things like that and used, if you incorporated that into the PvP system, that would be good. But they would have to plan it out from the start.
Yeah, they would have to rework all the skills. They would, yeah, it would take a lot of planning.
So it could be done. They would just have to be really careful about it when they initially start it, because otherwise they're going to back themselves into a corner.
Now, like Loudon was saying before about people jumping around, that's one thing. I know I've said this on the forums, but in Tabula Rasa it's funny because I've described it as PvP is kind of like laser tag on pogo sticks because of the fact that people just jump up and down and they shoot each other, and it's hilarious because the jumping, they're jumping probably 30 feet in the air, you know, just up and down, up and down, up and down, and then it's just annoying. And I've seen it in WoW too, you know, where they do a duel and people are jumping up and down and swinging the swords at each other. And it's ridiculous, I think. And I think that it's exactly like Loudon said, if they started doing that in Guild Wars, it would make it like a joke, you know, it wouldn't.
Yeah, that's just stupid. It's like, if you're going to jump up and down to avoid being hit, it's like, ooh, you can't hit me because I'm moving. Just aim for their head, and then when they jump up, it'll hit their chest. I mean, that's just, it's just ridiculous. You wouldn't be able to incorporate it into the way PvP is in Guild Wars right now. And they would want to expand on what Guild Wars is right now, not change it to be completely different.
Yeah.
My thought is, if you can hit a key instead of typing /jump, that's cool. But if you have to hit that key over and over to get a PvP advantage, that's not very appealing.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if that'll happen, because now we do have where you can, like, dodge ranger arrows by zigzagging left and right when they're shooting at you. So, yeah, that would worry me. I wouldn't like that either.
So, basically, what we're saying is, in PvE, it would be cool, but in PvP, it would not.
I would actually go along with that.
Yeah,
there would be a lot more to think about in PvP.
Yeah.
But you would definitely, it wouldn't be like, you wouldn't want it to be like a, you can jump up and down, and so then the warrior can't hit you with a sword. What?
If anybody shouldn't be able to hit you when you're jumping up and down, it should be dervishes.
Why is that?
Care to elaborate?
I don't know, I just don't like dervishes.
Okay, so we are allowed to make fun of the classes we don't like?
Oh, here we go.
What's next question, and how does it relate to rangers?
Well, actually, I'm sure you could figure a way, but it doesn't directly. The next one, question four, was about persistent worlds versus instance worlds. And we know that Guild Wars was kind of a pioneer for introducing this instant world thing to us, where I know, didn't they do that in Diablo 2 also?
Yeah, there was there was like a lobby, and then you'd enter a game, and then you'd only have like a maximum of 8 people in the game, I think it was. And but you could have people like join your game in the middle of in the middle of it. Like in Guild Wars, you go into an instance, and no one can enter once you've started it, right?
Yeah.
Diablo is a little bit different because you could start something, and let's say you couldn't kill the boss, you could call your friends and say, hey, join such and such game and help us finish. So, I mean, instancing isn't like a brand new concept or anything like that, but yeah, it's different because most MMOs only have like certain missions instanced or certain areas.
Yeah. And that's exactly what they're planning on doing with Guild Wars 2. They're talking about missions and dungeons will be instanced, but then everything else, you know, going from within the city to outside, it'll just all be persistent, where there won't be zoning and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically like all other, I hate to say popular MMOs, but, you know, you have WoW and LOTROs like that and Tabula Rasa. And I think that's something that a lot of people are getting more and more used to. But if they do this with Guild Wars 2, I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
I'm kind of curious how it would work. Like, for example, skill capping. You just go out there and the boss's body is already laying there, so you just hit your cap sig and move on. Or if you want to get a green for your hero and boss is already dead. I'm not sure how they would avoid the camping issues that happen in other games.
That's what would happen is someone had killed the boss already, then you would have to wait until it respawned and kill the boss again.
Yep.
I think that if they do the persistent and instance worlds, which I think they said they have, but when they do it, I hope they only do persistent worlds in some parts and not everywhere but missions and dungeons. Because I like instance, but also some persistent would be nice. And also, they're losing the whole demographic of people in WoW who love the instance, love the camping, love the attacking players randomly, and just they don't have any of those players in their game because there's no persistent worlds. I think really it's mainly just a money issue. They make more money with some persistent worlds.
I don't know. The only thing about that and explore and do something and someone else logs on later, it would really be nice if they could come out and meet me. That's probably the only plus that I could see from it, is having someone come in a little later. Otherwise, I could care less.
It's kind of interesting being able to, like, you're just wandering around and you meet other people randomly. Like, yeah. In LOTRO, I like to, like, if I see someone who's fighting, I'll just, like, you know, check them out and see if they're doing all right and throw them a heal or something if they're not, you know? It's kind of cool that you can, like, meet people who are not in your group. But one of the things you have to think about is that it's a lot harder on your system because there's a lot more data coming through rather than a single instance.
I'm sure a lot of flaming and fighting could come out about with that, too. There's people who don't want help.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of get, like, unspoken rules about whether you assist people or not.
Have your own little code.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of get that in, I think, in any game. Just kind of like just rules of conduct that kind of just develop among the players themselves.
Yeah, it sounds interesting to me because I've never played a game like that. So I think it would be, I'd look forward to that. I'd try it out.
One thing that would be interesting is Guild Wars has assigned drops right now, and a lot of other games don't. So if they're going to stick with that assigned drop thing and there's some team out there killing a boss, what's to stop someone from just coming and standing within the aggro bubble to have a chance of getting the drop?
Your party, that's what, is that it would only be for people in your party. And anybody else who's not in your party or is in another party would not get any loot from it.
So if two groups are camped looking for a boss to spawn and he spawns, the first one to hit him is who's going to get the loot for their party? just seems like there's a whole world of drops that they'd have to work on, because their drop system right now is somewhat revolutionary from what I understand, where everything's assigned, and it's not whoever grabs fastest or how the party decides to divvy it up.
Yeah, maybe if they had like someone who gave out quests like they do now, so if you were all out, just the party that got the quest would make the monster spawn, and then its loot was for them. So if someone else wanted the monster, you know, they'd have to wait and get the quest or something. I don't know, it seems kind of complicated.
It is. The original loot system in Guild Wars was very, very revolutionary when the game first came out, because that was one of the things that sold me on Guild Wars, was you didn't have to be a character that was on the front lines and could click on the ground and pick up the item first before everybody else. Because I was always, you know, I played a ranged character usually, and my computer was slower than everybody else's. So it was like I could never get any loot if I played with other people. It was like a pain in the butt. So Guild Wars having its assigned drops was like a big deal to me at the time. Nowadays, loot systems have gotten more sophisticated, I think, in all the different games, so that people don't like steal loot from each other. The question that you guys are talking about of like if there's two groups who want to camp one boss, like in LOTRO, it's whoever it is, the group that hits the monster first. They're the ones who will get the experience and drops from it until it respawns.
The thing about that is that's the same with Tabula Rasa, and what people are doing is they're running around and they're hitting all these different creatures and these bosses and stuff first, and then they're running away, and somebody else comes up and actually kills it, and they don't get any experience. The person who hit it first gets the experience, and there's some big problems with that. They're trying to work out those issues, and I think that's something that could potentially be a problem.
Ooh, that is very flawed.
Seems like it adds a whole level of griefing. People just going out there and causing trouble just to be mean.
Yeah,
people like that. And then it's kind of like scamming too. Sort of, you go out there and get the first hit, and then just sit down and wait.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is there a way to tell, Sean, if somebody else has already tagged the mob?
No.
Oh, see, in LOTRO, when you hit a mob, if somebody else comes along who's not in your party, the mob's name will be grayed out, so you can tell that someone else is already fighting this creature. And then I think if you run away a certain distance and the creature stops chasing you, then it resets and somebody else can go kill it. And you can't just, like, go get the loot after somebody else kills a mob for you.
Then couldn't you, in theory, be a high-level person and have a low-level person in another party and go and knock down a whole bunch of health and run away and then have the low-level person hit it twice and kill it and get a bunch of loot and a bunch of XP?
Probably not, because the monster would probably reset to its full stats.
I think mainly we're thinking about this a bit too much like they're taking the original Guild Wars and making it instant, I mean, making it persistent. I think they're probably going to restructure this a lot to make it friendly to having a whole bunch of people running around. And this also gives me an excuse to hang out in international districts more.
I just worry if it nerfs solo farming, since that's a big part of why I play. You have to wait for the boss to spawn.
It can. The only thing that would affect you, you would probably still be up to solo, but if like there was a favorite spot that you like to farm and other people caught wind of it, you could all be trying to farm the same spot and the same mobs, and there wouldn't be enough creatures for you guys to kill. Mm-hmm. Or you guys would be fighting over it. Because in Guild Wars, you could have, you know, X number of people all farming the same spot, but you're all in different games, basically.
Yeah, one of the big problems with persistent is just, it goes right along with that, and you'll see it a lot, where, say, you have to go kill 10 wolves. So you go out in this area to find 10 wolves, and there's, you know, 10 other people out there looking for the same 10 wolves. So you're all standing around waiting for one to spawn, and right when one spawns, everybody runs towards it. And that, I think, is one of the things that Guild Wars was trying to alleviate when they started the instanced system that they had. Yeah, that gets annoying.
RuneScape had those kinds of quests. Well, actually, most quests were like that. But if you call them quests. But yeah, how they really fixed their problem, aside from having a bajillion districts, was that they just made a whole bunch of the monster. Like, there was one of the first quests was, like, go out and kill 5 goblins and bury a seed or something like that. And there was a bajillion and a half goblins out there, and there was even more on the other side of town. So you really wouldn't have a problem killing 10 goblins.
But there's also the fact of, what if you want to farm a single boss, and 20 other people are also there also wanting to farm that same boss? Do you take turns? Do you?
If you want to do it over and over too, and he only spawns once an hour or whatever.
I think
And there's other people there, so then it's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to wait around for 5 hours and wait for your turn to kill him again? It's like,
you know what would be cool? Is like right now you can go normal mode or hard mode. It'd be cool if you could enter instanced or community.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
It'd also be cool to be able to switch between, I don't know if this was what you were just saying, but switch between the two modes in the middle of an area. Like, if you need help fighting an end boss, you can switch to community and call your friends.
If they were to do something like that, you would have to be like, you wouldn't be able to like get the boss down to half health and then try to switch and call your friends. It would probably reset.
Yeah.
And you would have to start over.
But I think the point about that would be that you wouldn't be able to get it down to half health.
Another thing that this introduces is right now, since everybody can, you know, meet in international districts and such, you can play with anyone. We could play with any other person who plays Guild Wars, but with the persistent worlds, there's no way to do it, as far as I know, other than breaking people up into servers.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you would have, I mean, let's say you only had 200,000 people playing your game. And I'm going to say that's not like a huge number. You can't have 200,000 people in one world. It just would kill everything. So they would have to break everybody up. And then, unfortunately, it would be like, let's say we started playing the game at separate times, and then you're like, oh, I want to play with my friends, but oh, they're on a different server. That's one of the things that Guild Wars has gotten rid of by having the different districts and such.
I think that's something that a lot of people take for granted with Guild Wars is, you know, once you play Guild Wars for a while and you can do that, and, you know, you tell your friends, oh, I'm, you know, TOA International District 1, and then they just join you in 5 seconds. And then you go to play something like, you know, World of Warcraft, and you want to do the same thing. It's like, oh, well, I'm on this server, and, oh, you're on that server. Oh, well, I guess we're screwed. We can't play.
Yep, we can't play together. And that is something that we've been spoiled with, having Guild Wars the set up the way that it is. I just can't think of any other way that they would be able to set it up so that we could play together if we were on different servers.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that Loudon's idea of being able to switch between public and private would be a great idea. But
I just see the potential for exploit there. They'd have to really think through every possible option.
I was thinking that would probably be complicated. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah. Switching in the middle would be hard, but I don't think entering from... It's not much more different than the hard mode versus normal mode switch. I mean, that instance world is already out there, or the non-instance world is already out there, and you can enter it, so it's just whether you're getting your own copy or the common copy.
Seems like they would have to change drop rates and stuff, because the people who went into an instance instead of the community would have a higher chance of getting the drops and selling the weapons and things, so it wouldn't really be fair.
Well, it sounds like everyone who talks about persistent is talking about they want to be out there for the camaraderie of it, not for the enhanced drops or whatever. So people who are hardcore farmers could go instance still, and people who want to go be social butterflies could go into the persistent one.
Or people who have not so great computers and can't handle all of the players can go into
the instanced ones instead. Yeah.
Well, shall we move on to the 5th issue?
Sure.
This 5th issue is PvP, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to read this here. This is from the wiki. They talk about there will be 2 different kinds of PvP in Guild Wars 2. This is something that Jeff Strain actually talked about in an interview. There will be the structured PvP, which is like we have now, where you have, you know, you start out at level 20 or whatever the max level will be, and you have your skills to choose from and everything. And so everybody's pretty much on a level playing field. And then they're going to have world PvP, which is will be on persistent server shards of a game area. And they're randomly matched up against a few other worlds. And that's in quotation marks. These matchups will be rotated every week or every 2 weeks. The combat is open and features many objectives and roles which players can do. Large crews can attempt to seize gigantic castles, while smaller groups can work on protecting supply chains that feed giant catapults, or capturing guard towers, or defending important choke points. This is all according to Jeff Strain. And what it is, like, the battle is on a larger scale, basically, both in the number of participants and duration compared to the PvP modes from Guild Wars 1. Victories in world PvP will confer benefits to the world that earns them. Bonuses, advantages, maybe everyone gets increased energy regeneration or healing rate or enhanced loot drop rate or something like that. Players are free to come and go from the battle as they please, which I guess kind of ties into what we were talking about. Players enter with a character of any level and use skills that they have available to that character already. Characters can enter as a sidekick, which will allow them to play as a higher level character also. One last point about this is world PvP is intended as a casual form of PvP designed to be more of a relaxed bridging point between PvE and the tactics and the pressure of structured PvP. It is hoped that players of any level or PvP experience can participate and be useful. So I just want to know what your guys' thought is on that.
Well, one thing is I don't get the sidekick thing at all. It just sounds like everybody would enter and end up being the same level.
Okay. I think I can explain that.
I think that is sort of the idea. Like the thing they introduced in Gwen, where you get the little boost that makes you level 20, so you're on a level playing field with everyone else.
Okay.
To me, it kind of sounds like a giant AB that you can come and go as you please, because that's what AB is to me right now, is a more casual, laid-back, less structured PvP.
I just wonder how they're going to do that, like as far as, say, you're a world who's against another world. I don't know if they're going to have, like, faction or how they're going to do that exactly.
Servers.
Oh, different. Yeah, that's probably, that could be a possibility. But then you could just tell all your friends and then they can all, you know, it can be like 20 against 5 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's basically their idea.
Like yeah, that's the idea. It's like, you can get people to go in, like in an AB, you always know there's, 12 people on this side and 12 people on that side. And even though it's more casual, it's still structured to a degree. Whereas if you have an open, anybody can join at any time, that you can end up with like 50 people on one side and 3 on the other, and then it's just a numbers game.
Well, WoW actually has world PvP like this, except this sounds actually better. But it actually, from what I hear and what I've seen, the world PvP there is never like 5-on-30 or anything like that. It's dozens against dozens. It's huge battles. And I think that's mainly because people thrive for that kind of stuff. Look at all the people in AB. I mean, just...
I don't know. That seems like massive chaos to me. I don't think I would enjoy it much. I like to be in control. I guess I'm like a lone wolf.
Yeah,
it seems like a big mess.
See, the only way I see that they could maybe get away with it is if they did certain, like if you had Luxon and Kurzik, and there was some way, a lot of MMOs now have a general chat over the entire server. And let's say that it was Luxon and Kurzik, just as an example, and the Kurzik, there were 50 Kurzik on 5 Luxon in this one area. Then the Luxon could maybe say over the Luxon chat channel or something like that, like, hey, we got this, you know, we need help over here at this certain area.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bunch of other people could come and help out. Now, I think having large, distinct faction like that would be the only way to do it. If it was like a guild versus guild kind of thing, nobody would care. You could make a shout out saying, hey, my guild's being attacked, and people would be like, so what? But if it was something that you were supposed to represent and something you were supposed to stand for, like, whether it be Luxon versus Kurzik or, you know, like Horde versus Alliance or whatever, then I think it might get people into it and feel like they would make a difference if they joined up and helped their side. You know what I mean?
It is. And Lotro's PvP is actually kind of like this. And I do enjoy it because I like playing in a large group when I'm PvPing. There's some people who would rather just do, like, one versus one, right? But because I'm usually playing a support class, I can't go, like, with my monk against a warrior. It just doesn't work. But it really ends up coming down to being a numbers game when you've got a large-scale, unstructured PvP system like that. And it, on one hand, it's kind of more realistic because it's like, well, this is a war. If you've got, you know, 200 people on one side versus 100 people on the other side, and then they clash, there's going to be casualties in the middle, but, you know, one will eventually wipe out the other. If you want to have that, there can be that. But Guild Wars PvP is not like that, and it's structured in a way that everything is much more skill-based, not numbers-based. And I don't want to see that happen to Guild Wars.
Yeah, I mean, I really like if it's like a huge giant war and a battle like that. I mean, you can't really see the strategies and tactics and find out. I don't know. I just like that. And that is like the main part of what I really love about PvP. But I mean, if you're saying this is the casual PvP. I mean, that just, what is casual PvP? You just go out and practice your skills. I mean, that.
I think what they mean by casual PvP is that you can just, it's kind of like in LEGO Star Wars. You can drop in and drop out whenever you want. It's not like alliance battles where you have to get a group and then go in there and then you're stuck there unless you want to let down your entire team and leave and completely throw off the thing. It's casual because you can come in and come out whenever you want, and there's enough people that it won't make a gigantic difference to lose one person.
Dude, there's online LEGO Star Wars?
No, I was just saying, like, when you're playing multiplayer, you can drop in and drop out your second person.
Oh.
If Glyph was online.
I was going to join the new LEGO Star Wars MMO.
Dude, when they make that LEGO MMO, I'm playing it. I don't care.
That game's awesome. But yeah, Guild Wars has always been skill-based, and keeping everything balanced has been a big deal. And having, you know, I mean, even having alliance battles, it is balanced to a degree because you're only allowed a certain number of people on each side. It's
also,
usually less coordinated because you don't necessarily know everybody on your team, but still, it's not like you've got 35 Kurziks overrunning 15 Luxon.
I think they're thinking of this for something like the Char versus the Ascalons. I mean, there's going to be quite a bit of fighting there, I'm guessing, and this might be something they're implementing. I mean, if you're a Char, or if you're a human who's an Ascalon for some reason, there would probably be constant fighting. I mean, look outside the wall of Ascalon and Priest Hearing. There's constant fighting there. You just can't participate in, unfortunately.
That's just because I haven't killed them all yet, that's all.
I do think Sean had a good point about the if people were fighting for something, because everyone used to be all geeked up about who had Favor of the Gods when it was required to get into FOW and UW.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think realistically there were that many teams that said, hey, I want to go farm foes, so let's go win halls first. But everyone did kind of take pride when their region had favor.
Yeah, definitely.
Or in alliance battles, there is an incentive to winning because then you can access the merchants and stuff in the particular town that's currently being owned. I mean, if there was an alliance battle like incentive or a Hall of Heroes like incentive, I think that it would be pretty much packed.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to our next issue, and that is the level cap. This is a big one among many players, but they're saying that the level cap will at least be raised, but there's not any details on how far, and if there will actually be a cap, or if it will be unlimited levels, or what. So I wanted to know what you guys thought of the advantages or disadvantages of a higher level cap.
There's a huge disadvantage of the fact that if it takes a while to get to the level cap, well, okay, let's first say there's an advantage to having a level cap higher because gives you a bit more playtime, more to strive for, because it simply takes you longer to reach max level. A huge minus to that is if you're at a certain level and fighting certain level mobs, you don't want to play with someone who is at a different level than you. In Guild Wars, most of the time, you're pretty close to the same level as everybody else, or you are all level 20, then you can play with your friends at any time. But if, you know, there's, let's just say, you know, there was somebody who was like level 90 and somebody else who's level 10, you don't want to be farming in the same area. So it splits you up a lot. You can have like your guildmates and you're all like talking in guild chat or something, but you're all playing in different areas because you're all different levels. That's just like not very team oriented anymore.
Well, I can see what you're talking about, but Guild Wars currently is kind of like that, but just on a very, very small scale. Like if you're a low level, you're normally in Ascalon or the Northern Shiver Peaks, well, Middle Shiver Peaks. But if you're like level 20, you're down in the desert or in the Southern Shiver Peaks or in the Ring of Fire Island, etc. So there's already that little bit of separation, and also you wouldn't want to go farming with a level 10 person unless you intend to.
The thing is, though, it depends if they're doing it for a grind or just because it's cool to see someone who's level 100 or whatever. Because right now you can get up to level 20 in a few days, and then you're on the same playing field as everybody else. Whereas in other games, you know, I know people who grind for months to get up to the max level, and they have to get to that max level to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not interested in it. You know, they've always said it's skill wars, build wars, not grind wars, and I really hope they stick to that.
Exactly, because Guild Wars, I always say it, but this is the thing, is that it's skill-based. It's not equipment-based like World of Warcraft. Your success is based upon how well you use your skills and how well you know your skills, not whether you are significantly higher level than someone else.
I think in their structured PvP, kind of throwing it back to PvP here, I think in their structured PvP, they'll probably keep their thing where you are automatically the max level, and so it doesn't really matter. And I think that in PvE, I don't think it should be will be so bad. I mean, if someone's like level 90 and you're level 80, although I really also doubt that they'll make the level cap 90. I bet it'll be like 30 or 40. But if it's like a 10 level difference, I don't see that much. If it's like a 20 level difference, I can definitely see a problem. But
I only see it being a big deal if, say, you have to get to certain levels to get certain skills to be able to use them. So, you know, if you're going into an area, you're going to want a monk who has this awesome heal skill, but it can only be if they're level 50 and above or something like that. It's the only way that I see that it would affect it.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I'm playing in Lotro, it's like I didn't want to play in PvP until I reached a max level. And, you know, there's benefits to having, like, you know, a monk who has their in-combat res versus one who's lower level and doesn't have it yet, you know? So it makes it... It's just not balanced the way it... I'm just saying it like as if it's already existing. It wouldn't be as balanced as Guild Wars is currently if it went that way.
Yeah, because Guild Wars now, I mean, there is... I mean, you could still not have elites. People have to go out and cap them and stuff. You know, people don't even have the ability to go get it. It's like, okay, I'll call you back in a week when I level up.
There is that, but on the other hand, you can create a PvP character, and you can open a skill with faction points, which you can get from, you know, you can go into random arenas or something like that. So you wouldn't necessarily have to grind for hundreds of hours in order to be competitive.
We're already starting to see it, though. Things like, you know, UW, Clear Group, Urson, rank 8 or higher. And to get into that, you have to go grind to get the Urson title up.
Yeah, yeah.
And
which is why I haven't done any of that, because I say, screw that, I'm not going to do that.
I think it puts everyone on their own kind of game, really. You don't have to join those groups. so I don't really mind.
I mean, Urson sucks anyway, so.
It's just an example, though, where you are better if you grind.
Yeah.
True, I see your point.
I think one of the things, too, is, you know, when you talk to anyone who's a World of Warcraft player, they don't really tell you what part of the world they're in or anything like that. They're always telling you their level, like I'm a level 70 Blood Elf or something like that, because that's the mark of greatness, supposedly. And, you know, if you didn't get Burning Crusade, so you're still level 60, because they raised the level cap when they came out with the expansion from 60 to 70. So if you're still level 60 or somewhere between 60 and 70, then you're a noob, you know. So I think it's one of those things which is just kind of a necessary evil in a lot of MMOs, is you need to feel like you're the best by being the top level. And the way Guild Wars alleviated this before is just by making a low level cap where it didn't, who cares about, you know, when it's like when people now will tell you in Guild Wars, yeah, I just got to level 20. It's kind of like, well, great, you know, so now you can start playing the game, you know. It's not about the level, but in several other games, I think it is, where a lot of people get into that mentality where that's their ultimate goal, is to get max level, and then that's it. Then they feel like they've beat the game or something, you know.
It really is, because that's how you track your progress. It's like, mm-hmm. your skills are weaker when you're level 10 as opposed to level 30. You have better skills as you go up, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. But the fact that, you know, your skills get so much more powerful as you go up in levels is kind of just one of those things that has always been part of MMOs. One of the things that I don't want to see in Guild Wars is equipment-based things, where you just have to farm forever to get awesome equipment. And, you know, it'll take, like, X number of hours in order to get anything which will make you competitive.
Yeah, I like the system they have now where it skins over stats and things look cooler, but it's better.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to go farm for those things if you don't want. I could just as easily, you know, get a collector item and craft the thing myself, you know?
What Sean was saying earlier about the whole thing, like, oh, I'm a level 70 Blood Elf or whatever. Well, the same kind of thing I've noticed is, well, maybe I'm crazy. Don't say anything. But I've noticed that, you know, people would scoff at you if you're an elementalist and claim that you're a good elementalist, and yet you don't have this specific Nightfall skill because you don't know Nightfall.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And, yeah, so, I mean, it's the same kind of thing, is that if you don't have Burning Crusade, you won't be level 70. And that's a whole level-based game. Well, this is a skill-based game, so if you don't have Nightfall, you won't have the skill. It's really the same difference. It's just another way around.
In my opinion, it only takes 30 seconds to get a skill. Like Sanea said, you go unlock it with the Faction of Balthazar. Whereas, you know, you grind for weeks to get from 60 to 70. So there's a huge difference there, in my opinion.
True.
Right, and plus it's like if, you know, say you don't have one Nightfall skill, that's not as big of a deal, because unless you have like a build that's specifically like they only want you to have this build and have that skill. But you can usually get along just fine by having only, you know, say you had two of the chapters. You could still get into groups having those skills. But, like, when the Burning Crusade came out, from what I understand, the equipment was all so much better when you had that. It was basically you had to buy the expansion, or else your equipment was now crap. Whereas in Guild Wars, you can not have one chapter, but you can still be competitive. It's like you're not like dirt just because you don't own factions or whatever.
Yeah, especially in PvE. In PvP, there's a little bit of, like you were saying, you know, we're running this build, we're spiking with this skill, and if you don't have it, you're not on the team. But in general, yeah, you can get by in PvE without any skills. Any specific skill.
You can't play the game without skills.
You're still here, Logan.
No, look, Logan's one of those that stands around pro Mesmer looking for group. I have backfire.
Actually, I think we said something about the same point as that.
He's like, were you watching me last night? I was trying to finish this mission.
All right, so let's go on to the seventh issue. This is about the playable races. Now, of course, we all know that we've only had humans to play so far. But then in Eye of the North, we were introduced to a few other races that were at least able to be our companions. So in Guild Wars 2, we're going to have more playable races. There's going to be the Char, the Asura, the Norn, and the Silvari. And they say that the different races will have their own advantages and disadvantages, as they do with most other MMOs. But do you think that this will be another one of those things that ruins the original concept of Guild Wars, where things aren't on a level playing field anymore? Or, I mean, I think it goes hand in hand with a lot of the other things we've been talking about, like the level cap and the world PvP and all these other things that are just getting further and further away from what they originally created Guild Wars for. Yeah. But what's your thoughts on the playable races?
My thought is it should be just like we were talking about with the weapons. They're all the same, and it's just a different look. Because there's so many times when you first come into a game and you don't know what you're doing, so you just grab some race and then you build that character and you're like, oh man, I actually like, you know, being a caster and I should have been this race instead of an ogre or a char, you know, that's more melee-based. Kind of rambling, but you know what I mean. You don't know what's going on right at first. You make the wrong choice, you put a lot of time into it, and then you're just kind of hosed.
I was just laughing because you're hosed because you chose to be a char.
With the skills now, like say we have our Asurn skills and our Dwarven skills, the Deldrimor, if it's like that where the races have their own specific skills, you want to play this char, which you wouldn't, but you would need him. People like branch out and play other characters, even though that's completely not my thing of one main character.
If they make it like that they each race has some specific special skills, that there will be groups that will be like, we need a char with brutal killing, and for this specific part of the new revised underworld. I mean, if it gets like that, I think that would be annoying. Although, I mean, I kind of like Loudon's idea of that. If they make it like they make the armors and make them just cool looking, it'll be fine. I think that multiple races will make it more interesting, because from what it seems like, since like the humans and the Char don't like each other, but the Norn and the Char do, and the Norn like the humans. Everybody likes the humans except for the Char, seems like, and they sort of like everybody. But it seems like whatever race you pick will kind of have a slightly different storyline to it, because you'll be starting in a different place, you'll be a different race, you'll have rivals and enemies that are different. I think it'll be interesting in gameplay aspect, as well as the lore aspect, that now, instead of having just like some two random factions of humans who dislike each other for some reason, killing each other in alliance battles, you'll have two longtime enemies of human and char or whatever fighting each other on the battleground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kurzics and Luxans have perfectly good legitimate reasons to fight, though. They're like,
yeah, I just don't know them.
Well, one person's like, we killed Shiro. And the other guy's like, no, we killed Shiro. You're like, no, you bastard, we did it. And then they start fighting.
See what I mean?
That's basically it, isn't it? The two heroes fighting over that?
That, or like, one accused the other of killing the first guy or something like that.
Oh, you mean like World War One?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Well, there's pluses and minuses to having different races. I know there's a lot of people who would like to see playable races in it, and they're like, well, it's kind of a pain that we can only play humans, which I don't really have a problem with, because I generally choose human when I am given the option. But it does add more variety. In PvE, you can have, like, a, you know, just like Loudon was saying, let's say your Asura is more talented in these attributes, and weaker and such, whatever. And like the char are like more strong, but they have less brains, you know. So you could have like a variety in your character when you create it. One of the things though is it comes back down to the PvP, is it's not going to be balanced anymore. Like right now you can create a male elementalist or a female elementalist and they're the same thing. But if they introduced now, quiet you, if they introduced like, you know, now you have an elementalist who is a char versus an elementalist who is a Silvari, now they have different stats. So it's not a skill-based game anymore. It's got some new factors thrown into it.
Yeah, the Asurn elementalist could go up to 17 in their elemental magic, something like that, you're thinking?
Yeah, exactly. Then automatically they've got an advantage because they're able to set their attributes different.
I can only see like a couple of remedies for this, but I don't like either of them. That's why I think that, I think they should have no difference. They should just be different, I guess, PvE-wise, that they have different storylines and such. But, I mean, like, if they make the different races have exclusive classes, like, the char can only be mesmers, elementalists, warriors, and ritualists, that will suck. I will go and personally go, like, bomb ArenaNet.
See, one thing I think is, I think, like, the way LOTRO does it and World of Warcraft does this, too, is where you have the different races have different starting areas. That's an interesting part of PvE that I would enjoy playing the different races. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But further than that, I would like nothing changed. It would be great if nothing else changed, and that would be more of Loudon's point, where it's more of just a skin versus stats. But it is fun, though, to play a new starting area, and it's incentive enough to start new characters of different races just to play the different starting areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it is true. Like, okay, in LOTRO, the thing is, you've got like special skills, like Roy was saying, like you've got a special racial skill, right? But when it comes down to it, you've got like an elf bow wielding character does not have the same stats as a human bow wielding character. So that just introduces these new factors to think about in balancing PvP.
I think kind of going off of the PvP thing, I think it will be nice to have, for once, different classes that don't include humans, elves, orcs, and undead.
Hobbits.
And I mean, like, these specific classes that have been every single game. I mean,
yeah.
And finally, we have some differentiating. I mean, we got char, which are kind of like dogs or cats, whichever how you call it. And then you got the Asura, which are like weird fungus
gremlins.
Things. Or and then you got the Silvari, which we have no idea what they're like. They're vegans. I don't know.
Those pesky vegans.
I think they're going to be pretty cool.
They're made out of trees. They don't hug them. So should we move on to the next one?
Please.
Okay, so the eighth one here is, you're talking about the setting of Guild Wars 2, which will be 250 years in the future. So what we will be doing is playing the descendants of our original characters. And this is all made possible through the Hall of Monuments, and it's something that we've been taught through Eye of the North, which will all tie in with Guild Wars 2. And I think it's a great system they've got going there. But I know, like, Rory, you were telling me when we were getting this all set up that you were really concerned about the fact that you've grown attached to your character, which we all have, but you play a main character, and you want to be able to play that character in Guild Wars 2, but you won't be able to. You'll be playing, like, the great-great-great-great-granddaughter or something.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, you know, with the way that they're doing this and all that, what do you guys think about that? You think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
I'm partial. I think it'll be nice just to I don't want to say a clean start, but that's really what it is. Clean start in a twisted world. But I also will be disappointed to see all of the achievements, or non-achievements, as it may be, on some of my characters just kind of disappear and just kind of be shoved into a box in the corner. But the one thing that kind of disturbs me is that if I'm playing a Char, and my original character is a human, how am I a descendant of it?
Yeah.
We'll tell you when you're older, Logan.
You should check out that MySpace page for the Gwen and Fire romance.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one thing they better let us do is reserve our character names if, like, we pre-order Guild Wars 2. Because I would just quit if there was somebody else who made a character in Guild Wars 2, created and named Loudon Swain. I would just, like, not play because I was like, what the hell? Because I think most people probably won't care too much. I mean, yeah, we're very attached to our characters. I would probably just create a new character named Lady Sinea, though, and try to make her look, like, exactly the same as my old character, and just pretend that it's not 250 years in the future. Yeah, because right now we don't know how the Hall of Monuments is going to affect anything. That's why I haven't really... I put the little, mini pig into my Hall of Monuments. But I've put, like, nothing in my Hall of Monuments, because we have no concept of what any of those achievements are going to be worth.
Well, I'm hoping
as far as turning them over to Guild Wars 2.
If I'm playing Guild Wars 2, that there's going to be some part of Rory that's going to be able to go into that game and I'm going to be able to play it. I mean, I will miss, like, everything about her. You know, I like her ribbons and her hair. And
you miss her smile and her many sets of armor.
The developers know this is a big deal for a lot of people. You can't read any forum post about it where it doesn't come up and people have their reservations and stuff. So I'm sure that it's a primary concern of theirs to make it transfer through in some way that's acceptable. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They're pretty smart dudes, other than the whole in the city thing.
Broyer weapons. Give me some better weapons. Please. That's ugly. They're horrible. It's not worth my time.
Yeah.
I think one thing that has probably been gone back to over and over and over and over, and I'm just going to restate it again, is that probably something that might happen, or that I hope will happen, is that people will go into Guild Wars 2 and see these achievements that the Hall of Monuments gives, like these assistants, quote-unquote, or these like buffs or whatever that the Hall of Monuments gives to your characters, sees what they do and sees other people's that you don't have, like this a mini pet you don't have or a hero armor that you haven't gotten, and you see these and say, that's really helpful, I wish I had that, and I'll go back to Guild Wars 1 and continue to play it and get those achievements to assist my Guild Wars 2 character.
See, that's what's actually pretty cool about it, is it's supposed to be a constantly updated thing, so that if you go in and do something, even after Guild Wars 2 releases, you can still do stuff in Guild Wars 1 that will affect your Hall of Monuments in Guild Wars 2.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, because it's like Back to the Future, you know, when the people started disappearing on the picture and then they started coming back. It's kind of like that.
I was thinking it more along the lines of like a time capsule, but, you know, I guess that works
yeah.
too.
Well, you know, the flux capacitor, that's what they need to put. I think that's in the middle of the Hall of Monuments, the flux capacitor.
They definitely need to make, like, some kind of reference to that. Like, the Asura will be like, yeah, we noticed that some kind of strange magic that's coming out of it, and we've labeled it Fluxior Compastastator, or something like that. And
no, the Asura are going to build a DeLorean.
And then there'll be some kind of crazy expansion in Guild Wars 1 where Asura from the future show up, and it'll be a bonus mission.
Loudon, you don't have any 80s references to throw in there?
I'm sure I could pull some out for you.
Okay, well, let's go on to the ninth issue then. This is about companions. What they have now, we have the heroes and we have the henchies, which is revolutionary for, you know, it's something that Guild Wars pretty much started. They're said to have, in Guild Wars 2, a customization similar to the heroes, but they're not actually going to take up a party slot. They're going to be considered an actual extension of the character. And when a player chooses not to bring this companion, then their character will have the choice to be buffed just the character itself will be buffed so that you won't have this extra disadvantage by not bringing a companion. I think that, you know, being the big fan of Heroes that I am myself, I think that it would be interesting to see what they do with this, because a lot of people do enjoy the Heroes and they do enjoy the henchmen. And to mess with that seems kind of strange, but if they have something better in mind, you know, I think ArenaNet would be the ones to do it, because they've been pretty revolutionary in a lot of things they've done. But I just want to know what you guys think about the possibilities of this new companion system and what kind of things you think would make or break that whole system.
Just sticking this out there first, the way I see it is that it's kind of like in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where the king has the guy following him with the coconut shells who makes it sound like he's riding a horse. It's kind of like that, you know? If he has this guy who isn't really part of the group, but he adds something to it that makes everything better. To not have
that... Yeah, but if he's not around, you're stronger.
But yeah, if he's not around, you get some kind of buff to you, which...
Yeah, but he could be playing your own personal theme music, and who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, who wouldn't want their own song? But yeah, when I read that it was going to give you some kind of buff when you don't have it, I thought that was going to be kind of weird, because I think that you shouldn't get a buff if nobody in your party has their hero out, their quote-unquote hero. And if one person has a hero out, does everybody else get a buff? Because that seems kind of lopsided if your hero sucks. I mean, I know it's customizable, but what if you just give them, like, I don't know, a non-max fiery dragon sword with... Oh, plus water magic rune on it or something. I don't know. It makes your character worthless, and yet everybody else is stronger. I just think it's a little bit lopsided, but I still think the hero idea will be cool, simply because I like heroes.
My thought is it depends if they take a share of the drops or not. If they do, they're out.
Yeah,
it just sounds like a new feature that they're adding to characters, because if everyone's going to have one, then it just sounds kind of... stupid to me. I mean, it sounds kind of like everybody's going to be able to have a pet. But if you don't have a pet, then you're more powerful.
A little mini me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound weird.
I'm a huge fan of Heroes and Henchmen, though. It means that I can go out and I can play in an instance and I can set myself to offline and I can play by myself and not deal with anything. Or it means that you don't have to get a full group in order to be able to play. I'm with Sean that I'm a big fan of the way Heroes and Henchmen currently work.
Except Zed Milani.
I think Zed
well, Zed would be okay. Yeah, Zed would be okay if you could just get him to follow you around and, like, carry all your extra gear for you, because you pick up more drops. But other than that...
Okay, I can see how the sidekicks or heroes could be helpful if they provided extra storage. I can see how that'd be great. I would dig that. I mean, even if my hero guy was worthless, if he had extra storage, I would love it. He would be in my party all the time.
And if you could name him, too.
Ooh, yeah. Little Johnny. Follow me around.
You know, as long as they'll unflag themselves when I go in and read my mind, I'm all for it.
Are you one of those people who flag your heroes somewhere and leave them?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Poor guys.
Like, Ogden, what are you doing? You know I'm going up.
They're all, like hanging out, waiting for Rory to come back. They're like, she's coming back for us, right? Isn't she coming back for us?
Well, I guess this brings us to our last issue. The last thing I wanted to wrap this up with was I just wanted to hear from each of you to see what would be the one thing that would completely turn you off to Guild Wars 2. If there was one thing that you could name that would be a complete deal breaker, even if it's just a change from Guild Wars 1, or if it's just a new game design thing that they introduce, or something we've already mentioned, or whatever. I'd just like to hear from each of you to see what that one thing would be.
Mine, for me, would just be if my friends in Guild Wars 1 don't go to Guild Wars 2, I won't go. Because right now, that's probably the main reason I'm still playing Guild Wars.
Yeah, that was going to be my answer, too. People I play with is why I play, so if they're not there, then I don't see any reason of... I'd check it out to see if it's cool or not, but I'm not playing Guild Wars still because the content is so cool. It's because the people who play are so cool.
Why, thank you.
I was about to say the same thing.
I meant Sean.
Yeah, if Sean's not on friends list, I just close it out.
For me, it would either be friends, or if my friends don't go over, that would be a big one for me. But even if they didn't, I mean, it would all, if it had a monthly fee, I wouldn't be playing it anyway.
I do monthly fee if it's like it is now because it's so cool, and I play a ton for the hours I put into the game. They would have to charge me a whole heck of a lot for it to not be more economical than any other game.
My big thing would be if they made Guild Wars 2 level-based or equipment-based, then I wouldn't play it because that's not what Guild Wars is.
When we first got this together, I wasn't going to give my opinions, but I've been doing it the whole time, so... I don't know. There's a few things here and there that I'm definitely going to try it out, at least, you know. I guess it's more of an issue of if it'll keep me there. But the great thing about it is the fact that if there is no monthly fee and there is no any kind of fee that makes it so that you're, you know, a better player or whatever it is, basically if they keep it the pay schedule the same as they have now, then that's fine because you don't actually have to quit. You can always go back, you know. There's right. There's no dedication that you have to put into it. But for me, the thing that concerns me the most about this game, about Guild Wars 2, is I worry about how some people are saying, well, it's going to be just like WoW, or it's going to be just like this. But it seems to me like it's going to be like a lot of the same issues as WoW, but not the same problems. Like with world PvP, you know, and with the persistent worlds and the level cap and all these things, just because WoW has it, it doesn't mean that this is going to be another WoW, you know?
Right. That's what every single new MMO has been trying to do, is like they want to do everything that WoW did because they want to be the next big thing. And the thing is, there's like so many MMOs out there now. Guild Wars is one of the few games that's different.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and like you guys are saying, it is different, and that's a good thing. I mean, with everything trying to be like WoW, I think ArenaNet is simply trying to take their already amazing game, their already great game, and add in things that made WoW great, things that attracted players to WoW, and add them into their game just to make it better.
Exactly. That's my point exactly, is I hope that they stick with the same innovative thought process that they've had with what made Guild Wars 1 so great, and they just introduce these other little things in there that make other MMOs attractive, but they don't change completely. They just introduce new things.
I have concerns about the instance world too, because one of the cool things you hear from people that they like about Guild Wars is you can just jump on and play for 30 or 40 minutes and do your little thing, and you don't need to spend hours getting set up or, you know, hours waiting for this boss to spawn or anything like that. And it seems like a lot of that would go away if you're going to have to go out there and plant your ass and wait 3 hours for this boss to come back so you can try to get his green or cab his elite or whatever you're out there to do.
When I've talked to people who play WoW and have tried Guild Wars, the main response I get is that they don't like the low level cap, which, like, you like grinding? Weird.
On that level cap thing that we kind of talked about before, and some people have said it on the forums, it would be cool if skills capped at like level 20 or your attributes capped or whatever, but your level just kept on going. So it just, if people wanted to grind for bragging rights, then they could be level 300 and they would still have the same skills as everyone else. But then people would be like, oh wow, that's so cool, you have a high level. Just like, oh wow, you're carrying a torment shield and that kind of stuff. Just another form of skins over skills.
Yeah, like we were talking about, like, what's an unlimited level cap, where, like, you could just, right now we have something like that, where you can just keep getting experience, but it doesn't make you more powerful than the next guy.
Yeah, and you can't really show it. If you could ping it, that would be bragging rights, you know? And I think that's, like, what a lot of WoW people live for, are the bragging rights. And that's their only problem with Guild Wars is that you can brag about Collector Sword can still poke you for the same damage.
Right, exactly. But also, if you have a game where it's simply your level means that your skills are more powerful, then, you know, you can go through the game and simply trounce anything that's lower level than you. Whereas in Guild Wars, you actually have to know what your skills do and how to use them in order to be able to do the higher level content. So it's, I can see how somebody who's not used to doing that and is used to just DPSing the hell out of other things could be turned off of Guild Wars.
And I think that's one thing they're trying to appeal to Guild Wars 2, as well as keeping their older audience from Guild Wars 1 and the people who like the persistent worlds and the no ganking in the middle of PvE. You know, I think they're trying to appeal to both, and if appealing to one group means that they need to put in some persistent worlds, I think I can deal with it. One thing I do like about Guild Wars 1 is that you can get on and do a quest in a half hour and then get off, and you don't have to, like, get a gigantic group or anything, because, you know, the areas are built around what level you are and how powerful your character is at the time.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And if you didn't, just wait for the blooper reel at the end of the show. I had something I wanted to announce for all Guildcast listeners who might be interested. On March 1st, in like less than 3 weeks from now, I will be releasing my very first podcast novel. It's called Eve of Adam, and you can check out two teaser trailers that I've created over at the website eveofadam.com. That's eveofadam.com. I do have to warn you, though, the premise of the story is pretty much science fiction with a bit of theology mixed in, so if that's not your thing, then you might not enjoy this. But I thought I'd mention it to anyone who might want to hear another one of my projects that isn't game-specific. The story's plot is like this. There's a man who finds a digital voice recorder, and on this recorder is a daily log from a man that he once knew and once worked with in the United States Air Force. And his name is Evan Hyde. Evan seems to believe that he is the last man left on Earth, according to these recordings that he's doing. But already we know that that can't be true. But we wonder, why does he think that? And what really happened to him? On this podcast novel, I will be the one performing Evan Hyde's voice. It will be done completely in character, as will the website, which is supposedly created by the man who found the recordings, and he goes by the name of John. I don't want to give away too much just yet, because it gets way more in-depth than that, but go ahead and take a listen to the two short trailers that I made and the in-character website, and just see what you think. Also, you might look at the calendar and realize that this coming weekend is Kanuga, which is the grand finale event for Guildcast. Lady Sinea tells me that she has an episode that she's been working on, and then there's the episode that I will do right after Kanuga, giving my thoughts on everything, as well as the thoughts from the people who will actually be at the event. And then, that's it. Guildcast will then be done. So this is just a friendly reminder that the reign of terror is almost over. And I will, of course, take a considerable amount of time to explain my thoughts on the podcast's history, the future, and just everything else in this final episode. But I'll try not to get too mushy. Also, I wanted to mention one last thing. This podcast, as I've mentioned before, is part of the Virgin Worlds Collective. And I don't know why, but I fail to mention that almost every single time. But I know I mentioned it a while back. Brent over at Virgin Worlds has done a wonderful job of hosting my other two podcasts that I do, Tabula Cast and Oh My God Real Life. And even though I still maintain the hosting for this show, Guildcast is considered still part of the collective. So I just want to get people to go over there, check out the whole podcast collective, because there are really, it's growing by leaps and bounds every day, it seems like. There's been a few new podcasts
added to the collective very recently. So if you haven't been over there in a while, go over to virginworlds.com and check out the Virgin Worlds Collective. And if you can, go ahead and throw a few dollars Brent's way. He has a pretty nice way to support his website and the collective itself. He's paying for the hosting for all these people in the collective. So it's a really great thing he's doing, and I think people should definitely support him. So with that said, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
So when I get up to get more beer, should I announce it so you know I'm away, or should I just go?
When is this, are you going to have this out? I was going to say happy birthday to someone, but that might be too late.
Probably Monday.
All right. He's at Gildy. He has the same birthday as me, so that's pretty cool.
It's cut out.
You just cut out.
You need to say it again.
You're still cutting out.
It's okay.
I should text it
happy
to Sinan.
Happy birthday,
next.
Lax.
We should just have her type everything and someone read it.
Yeah.
Let's have that automated voice thing.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Unfortunately, it sounded like she had a lot of good points to make, but we couldn't hear any of it.
The world will never know. Can you hear me now?
Loudon, do you have like a button you're pressing every time she starts talking?
Rory didn't come with a push-to-talk feature, unfortunately.
That's going to be at the end. I'll just add in the parts. Should be like in her voice, I think, and I'll be like, I think Sean is awesome. Or Logan, still with us?
He had to phone a friend.
Do we have any final thoughts or anything?
Rangers suck. We done?
Right.
Can I leave yet? Please?